Worst case scenario, we both of us get cancelled on this app. Wait, did Joanna leave? Joanna, come back. Joanna, you back?
Yeah, I'm back. Yeah, sorry,
I don't know what happened. No, it's okay.
As soon as you said you were recording me, you know, my company just cut it off. I'm kidding.
Oh, really? Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I say that because of you. Like, it's you now. So, like, worst case scenario, we'll get cancelled on this app together.
No. We built this for 5 years. You're on your 5 year or 6 year anniversary now?
For the podcast, 6 years, yeah. Baby. 6 years and counting. Holy moly. 6 years and 7 months. So we launched April 5th of 2018. Yeah.
7 years. You're closer to perfection, actually.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, no, we can. No way we can get canceled. This is the peak of the world.
Never underestimate the power of Joanna. You know how you always bring this side of me that people don't even know about.
No, so long as we keep it on track, okay?
Yeah, my you're my trigger. By the way, your hair is fine.
I'm using the side. Oh, thank you. Yours is actually pretty. I was gonna tell you when you turn to the side, I saw what you did. I was like, loving the look. Styling. You had like a two
like a French braid thing.
Yeah.
It's thanks pretty. For my styles. Thanks. All right. Welcome everyone to the podcast. I don't even know how to even describe to this podcast. Let me just say, I've been wanting to bring this person on the podcast for a while. They actually almost came on the podcast about 4 years ago. Remember when we had that joint presentation with Mr. Kenny? But it was on Facebook. We could only allow one person at a time. We were supposed to talk about Jackpot Experience.
Yeah, that's true.
And he got on before you, and we couldn't bring you on board. Yeah,
I know.
Don't worry, girl. I got your number. I know all of the timeline. So, okay. She's part of this community of friends that I have, and almost everybody on that platform has been on the podcast except Joanna. So, just taking stock of my friends, I was like, what kind of fake love is this? How can somebody say they care about you and even come on your podcast? That's why I just gaslit how.
Oh my god.
The gaslighting is through.
This is harassment. The
form immediately, guys. I filled that form with immediate alacrity. So I said put bio. When we send out forms to guests, we'll have them put their bio and things they want to talk about. Mm-hmm. This girl not put bio, so I don't have any bio. Actually, I know her as Dr. Joanna Atashu. She works for Siemens.
Speaking of almost coming on the podcast, you know, I don't know why. We would, you know, I'm here now, though.
Joanna, okay. I don't feel like we can have a regular talk, so I need to prepare my audience.
We're gonna have a regular
talk. We cannot, Joanna. This is you and me. Don't you get it? There's just something about our dynamic that brings out just something like. Even when I say I'm in rehab, people just you just want to bring me out of that place and come back to this place again. So heads up to the speakers. You're going to see me in a different light today. You know, I always talk about the mask we wear, depending on the room we're in. As a matter of fact, Joanna has the remote control to one of my masks. And yeah, just the heads up. If you don't know how to prepare my guests. All right, Joanna, welcome to the podcast. And should I call you Dr. Tasha? Just call you JoJo.
I
call
you
JoJo like Ari does. JoJo, yeah. So Joanna is one of Ari's aunties, and we love her so much. So maybe tell us a little bit about you, and all of that kind of fancy stuff.
Talking about myself. Well, I think you gave the highlights. I think most of my friends might consider me as the auntie, which honestly I'm trying to with you. I do not want this title anymore. Okay, can I be like mama, like, and have like, because like seriously
I'm gonna take Ari for a week. You'll be on permanent birth control.
I can do that exactly in short doses. Okay, permanent 1 hour, control. 30 minutes.
I love you, Ari. You know, I love you.
A whole day and that's it. Yeah, I love you, but you know, that's why I'm
there's no break
it.
There's no break in between. You wake up and you go to bed with the same people.
Yeah, no. But yeah, that's to say that I mean, I have a friend group of different strong, powerful women. Mo is definitely one of them that I really do look up to in different aspects of their life, both professionally and personally, in mothering. Like, they just do an amazing and excellent job. So yes, I would say, I mean, I'm the middle child, so I have two older ones and three younger ones. But my oldest, like, you know, my mom's oldest is 10 years older than me, and then the youngest is 10 years younger than me. So I feel like I'm right in the middle, and oftentimes I feel like my role is always like the balancing act between, you know, the young people and the older people, and I find that that translated into my friendships as well and relationships outside family. Besides that, I'm an engineer by training, process engineer, chemical engineer at work. Now I work as a software salesperson, frankly, so I'm just trying to sell stuff on my 247, but I like it, I enjoy it. It gives me a work-life balance that I definitely appreciate. So I'm curious as to, Mo did not really give me heads up on what we're going to be discussing today, so I don't even know what I'm up for, but
yeah,
you know,
for
what?
A treat.
Surprise me.
Exactly. I'm even surprised. I'm going to surprise myself. So,
God.
I think Joanna is beauty, definitely beauty and brains. And do you want to tell us where you're from? Like, Idoma, right? You want to say a little bit about what part of Nigeria you're from? Yeah.
Yeah, so I am from Benue State. Nigeria is divided by two main rivers, River Niger and River Benue. And somewhere around where they meet, there's the state called Benue. I think that's why I take the name from that river. But I never, like, I have been to that state maybe 3 or 4 times in my life. But I grew up most of my life in the northern part of Nigeria. So I grew up in Abuja, in Kaduna, a little bit in Kano as well, Jos. I have spent most of my life in the northern part of Nigeria. So I do speak Hausa. Unlike, you know, most of the people you see here that speak Yoruba and Igbo. I am Yoruba by association. Okay. But truthfully, I am considered a northerner.
I think even Yoruba name, by the way, with all these Yoruba affiliations.
I'm saying new criteria.
Shalewa.
No, you've tried to give me this name with Taiwo before, and no, we've decided
I'm giving
that,
you
more Shalewa.
That's the name.
No. Can we read
the
this
others have spoken? The others have spoken. So let's start from how we met. Do you remember when we met? Oh, I remember.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
you
don't remember. Oh, of course.
Okay,
I
go
do.
Ahead. Yeah.
So, remember the Hackerman building, NHB? You were studying there.
Yes.
So, there's this thing being at you. So, we both went to UT Austin. So, Joanna got a PhD in engineering, I in pharmacy. And when you stumble upon Nigerians or even blacks on campus, there's a way you can always tease out Nigerians. You're like, my people, how far now? You know, like, ordinarily, if I met Joanna on the street in Lagos, I probably would have said hi. But it was just being in Austin, and then she was studying, and I was passing by going to my department. They were saying, wait, are you Nigerian? And she was like, yeah. I mean, looking out, you know, so if I'd known, I would have just walked back and not even said hi.
I'm innocent.
The things I've expressed with this, if I'd known, I would just, you know, be like, ooh, no, don't say hi to her, but just kidding. And then you're like, yeah, hi, you know, I'm new here, and you're talking about your school. So, okay, yeah. And then we told you about Toastmasters.
Oh, yeah.
Remember? And then you start coming, and then had that, I think that was really it. Then, did you
so
meet...
So it wasn't through Leke?
No, it wasn't through Leke. I didn't meet you through Leke. Eventually, I found out that you knew Leke as well, because Leke started coming to Toastmasters. And then, before you knew it, Nigerians in, like, our cohorts in Austin, then we would do, like, hangouts, social events, and then our circle started crossing. But I think the relationship was solidified during Chisholm's wedding.
Oh, yeah, because we had to learn the dance routine, and you
dance
made us
routine.
Go through a whole, like, I'm like, okay, Mo, she's like my first twerking teacher or something. It's like, okay, we're doing this publicly at a wedding? Okay, sure. It was fun.
Yeah, and so it's 8 years now, because that wedding was in 2016, May 14, 2016. So it's been 8 years. So every time Chisholm and my husband celebrate their wedding anniversary, I celebrate our famous 5 group. So yeah, that's how we met.
Yeah.
I guess let's start with how you grew up. Like, if you were to paint a picture about your childhood, what are some of the memories that evoked in your mind about how you grew up?
Um, So I did mention that I do have 5 siblings, mm-hmm. but it didn't really feel like I grew up in a big family, so to speak. And the reason for that is a lot of us did go to boarding schools. So at any point in time, there's only maybe 4 people or so, 4 kids and dad and mom, maybe at most, you know, at home. I would say I grew up in a disciplined home, I think, which is probably typical for most Nigerian families. We went to church a lot. However, the interesting thing about going to church and how, you know, my family did take religion, like where religious would do prayer, devotion every day and all that stuff. But I can remember my parents, particularly my mom, also being sort of like common sense people, okay? And we had this whole idea that it was never said, there was no rule book, but there was a way that you as an otashu had to behave in some sense. It was like unspoken. Some of it maybe might be a little bit, I don't know, borderline snobbish, so to speak. And they called me a snob in secondary school and all that. But a whole lot of it is just a focus on, like, you know, you're held up to high standard. And the highest mm-hmm. standard, even though it was ingrained in, you know, Christianity and Bible, it wasn't really that. It was like the Tashi rule book or whatever that is. So like even as a young kid, like they can leave money randomly and it's like you expect to see your money whenever you come back, even though we're like many kids and all that. Just because, wow. you know, like how can you, like that's beneath you. Why would you steal? That's literally kind of the idea I kind of had growing up. Education was important. So it was important, you know, you study your books, you get good grades, you would be rewarded, you know, I'll buy you a bicycle and all that stuff. Also strange in the way we got brought up. And then sticking out for each other. It's like, you know, you're always siblings. Maybe some of it may have come from the extended family life. I'm not sure. Or maybe my parents' experiences. But a whole lot of it was like, you know, you have to stick together. You have to support each other. And you have to, you know, kind of like stand in there for your siblings, your brother, your sister, whenever they needed you. So that my first community, so to speak, was.
Joanne, I think your internet is bad. Are you in Doma or somewhere? You're muted. You're muted, Joanna. You're muted.
Oh, I'm thinking, yeah. Okay, shall we try again? And if I get kicked out, maybe I change location because I'm not sure what this is.
Oh, is it your location? Because I know Houston, people don't have lights. You don't have good gas station.
This is more you always keep attacking Houston.
Nah,
for.
Internet.
You still come here and buy our snacks. I forgot to bring up my plantain.
It's only plantain chips. By the way, Joanna, can you mail me some from HB? Please,
let me be on the record. Every time she comes to Houston, she goes to HEB. HEB, by the way, which you don't have in Oklahoma. H-E-B. And she cleaned out the entire rack. Yeah.
I checked on Amazon. It's like $10 or so for one. When it's like $5 and something. So yeah. HEB. That's the only thing that makes Texas. Well, not the only. I love Texas, but Houston is just one of those. Houston feels like a swamp to me, but we'll get back to that. Let's keep going on. So we're talking about the otashi rule and,
Right, yes. And education was important, you know, you had to get good grades and study hard. And our social life, most of it stemmed out of going to church. So we would be involved in, like, you know, the youth church, the children church. It almost feels like a rite of passage for all of my siblings to be like some youth leader or some pastor or some version of that. So we're really involved, at least in the church, and that's where we got all our social life.
Very, very interesting. So you have 2 brothers and 3 sisters.
I don't know what other aspect you would like to zoom on any of these topics. We can go there.
That's okay. You have 2 brothers and 3 sisters, right?
1 brother, with the last kid, you know, my dad needed to have a son.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you grew up in Abuja, Kaduna, Kano, depending on where your parents were, and then you went to boarding house. Then what formed your decision to study engineering?
That's a pretty funny story. I think in the house, they always assumed I would be a doctor. you know, oh, you're the doctor of the house. Oh, yeah, apparently.
More like lawyer.
What means you? I'm scared.
More like lawyer. More like lawyer.
We already have a lawyer, okay? That's the first child.
Two is not. Two is not blessing.
All sectors. Anyway. And I, frankly, you know, as a child, you really do want to satisfy your parents' wishes, so to speak. And whether it's conscious or subconscious, I did not know at the time. It's just now looking back and playing back all the choices that I made and my decisions. I was like, no, a whole lot of it is just because people kept saying. So in my mind, I felt like, you know, I could study anything, I could do anything. So, you know, when you... when you're in high school, finishing high school, you write JAMB and you write your high level school certificate exams.
Yeah.
That's when you have to choose your
major
course of study, right? In university. Exactly. So at that point, I had filled in, you know, medicine and all that in my forms. And then I had gone and I had submitted it. And then like, I can remember before the final, the deadline for submission, there was one visiting day that happened, okay, before then. And then you're supposed to, you know, show your parents, just get the final okay from them before you turn it in. And prior to that, I was, you know, I was good in most of my classes, chemistry, biology, physics, math, photo math. So pretty much I could, you know, take any swing, whichever way I wanted. But then my physics teacher, I can remember him having a conversation with me and telling me, you know, why did you put medicine? You know, like you're going to be, because it's going to be like a lot of studying. You're good at math. You know, why are you not studying engineering? And it was just like, you know, I'm going to be good at medicine too, you know, and I'm sure there's some math in there or all that stuff. But he was like, he thought I should study engineering. Anyways, visiting day happened. I showed my dad the form, who in my mind was, you know, oh yes, you want to study medicine. And I swear to God, my dad said the strangest thing ever. In all my time growing up, I had never, ever, beyond that point, it's not that crazy.
Okay.
It's not anything crazy. Calm down. Okay? He just took my form and he was like, in that moment, he was like, you're going to be an engineer. And I swear to God, I think that's the only time ever in my life and in my childhood that I ever had ever heard him even allude or say anything related to this. Like, my whole life is just like,
doctor. Did he even remember he said that?
So, I don't know. I don't think he did. She's like, I don't know. I have no idea. It's the only time I can remember my dad suggesting that I study engineering. Only time ever. And then I was just walking back. I was like, well, the person I'm even doing it for, I don't even understand. So I just canceled.
A twist of fate.
Okay. I know. Engineering it is. And that's how I ended up studying engineering. But mostly, yeah.
So my mom, as you know, is an engineer, right? And she talks about way back in the day. My mom is a civil engineer, yeah. It's a male-dominated field, right? So how was it like for you? You went to ABU Zaria, Ahmed Bello University, right? Ahmadu Bello University in Zaria.
How dare you?
When I think about Ahmed, I'm thinking of Bola Tinubu. Tipping. Don't cancel me.
No. Ahmadu Bello University.
Yeah, so yes, Ahmadu Bello University, yeah. Can you tell us what your experience was in college, especially how many females were there and what it was like, you know, and which part of engineering did you study and what it was like for you being there?
So I studied chemical engineering. When we got the, you know, entry class size, it was a total of 180, almost 200 students, okay, that they have, like, in engineering. And as you would imagine, females were, at least in chemical engineering, weren't more than 20. Okay, so that's like 10%.
Yeah.
Of the class, and then the class keeps, you know, shrinking
down. Yeah. After that first year of exam.
Right. Exactly. And people then, you know, so physics now, whatever. So, but yes, it was a varied experience for me. So I think maybe generally as humans, we do like a challenge, or at least I do like a challenge. Like, you know, oh, okay, I'm gonna be one of the few girls in here, so let's kick some boys' ass. I always like to do that, like, you know, that's like fun for me. That was thrilling for me. So, yeah, well, you know, first just being recruited in, there was like, I don't know how these boys tend to know this information, but you know, they would know, oh, the ranking. So out of all these 200 people, I was the second person in this ranking that was, you know, based on jam score, wherever that got in. Mm-hmm. And then the other person was my friend, Japheth, actually, who you know, and who's here. That was the person that was on top of me. Japheth.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And so we kind of like somehow formed this set. I don't know. It wasn't intentional. It was definitely not my choice, but somehow a sect was formed, okay? And in that sect, it was me, kind of like the only girl in there, and then all these other boys. But then pretty much from then henceforth, anytime, you know, results is released and anything is out, like, you know, they'll always go check, oh, where's this person? Where's this person? And, you know, thankfully, consistently, I ended up always being, like, that top rank. And so I don't know if it's maybe related to that or the fact that quote unquote I've always been called snobbish. People just refer to me as, you know, you're here showing boys shiggy or something like that. Like, I just didn't care. I wasn't involved with them. I didn't need to talk to anybody, but like, it was like in the engineering. So the way ABU is, if you went to ABU, okay. Mm-hmm. Engineering degree, the engineering school has a hostel for engineers, but it's just the boys.
Mm. Where did the girls stay?
Well, the girls stays with everybody else, you know. So we don't have like an engineering hostel for girls because
this was when boys were expected to be engineers before, yeah.
Maybe I have no idea. So there was like a dedicated engineering hostel for boys. And so, you know, because you guys, you come to class together, you also live in a hostel or, you know, dorm, whatever, together. So you bond more, you share information, they know everything that's going on. So for me, that experience was like, they always knew stuff. And maybe eventually I would know because, again, you're engaging with these boys. But I'm like, how do you guys know this? Because, again, that hostel is not just like, you know, 100 level. It's 100 level all the way to 500 level.
Wow.
So they have that connection.
Intergenerational, you know, connection, yeah.
Yes.
Past questions, so, notes.
And gossips as well. Yeah. What is gossip?
Oh,
but,
yeah.
And this is like taking a segue into like my experience in the program. I always felt a little bit like, in, you know, late on information. It's not that, you know, eventually you wouldn't know. You would know because, you know, you have guys in there. But like, you know, they were like, oh, you know, tutorial later or something like that. And it was just, oh, Lord, how do you guys have all of this information? To my advantage, though, because I was always top of the class and they would always have to recruit me for these, you know, tutorials. I would have access to these materials. I would help build some of these materials. And it was just like, okay, me and the other guys. It's kind of there. I remember one of my friends, a guy actually telling me, oh, you know, Joanna, you really need to, and this might not be something I should be proud of, but he said, you know, You should consider taking the girls under your wings. I don't remember the exact words, but something like, you know, you need to find these girls. Yeah, and like, you know,
mentor them in a way. Yeah.
Right, I guess, in some sense. Again, like I said, the band or the group, it was not intentionally created. It had nothing, like, I don't even know how it happened. I think maybe it formed based on, like, again, performances. It was not, totally not intentional. But I also did not make, like, you know, efforts on my side to say, oh, you know, I want to be friends with somebody. I want to be, if I was friends with anybody, it just like I fell into that friendship, or maybe they made the effort. Like, I was fine just being solo, like going to class, going to school, going to church, coming back home. Like, I had trigonal movements. I was like, that was me.
Thanks for sharing that. I mean, in listening to your story, I can see how you talked about your childhood and your family values, especially the values of playing, like community building, like helping one another, but at the same time being independent of your own thoughts, but you know the values, how that really served you well. And then your pursuit of excellence, you weren't competing with the boys, you were just, you know, competing with yourself. And if the offshoot of that was...
Exactly.
You know, doing great. That's it. That's the Otasha values. Thanks for sharing that. So you finished school, and I know you did very well because you came out with the first class. Just nerdy
okay,
people.
Just throw that in there. Thank you.
When did you decide to pursue an advanced degree in the US?
Okay, so first pursuing an advanced degree, and then secondly in the US. Mm. So first I thought, you know, in Nigeria, you know, when you graduate, I guess you're expected to, you either have a job, like if you have like someone, I feel like, you know, a godfather in this, you know, company that's gonna help you in there, or again you go through the whole process, you know, applying to multiple jobs and all that, or you go for a master's and PhD, which by the way in Nigeria takes X amount of years, whatever your professor decides. Yeah. It's not like structured and it's not fixed. Or if you're a girl, you know, you get married. That's like, you know, some of the options. Mm-hmm. So I can remember like telling myself, you know, I do want to be an advanced, I do want to get an advanced degree in chemical engineering. But in your 500 level, you take like some new additional classes. That was the first time I was introduced to control theory. And I liked it a lot. I like, you know, control theory. I like the math behind it, algorithm simulations. And I was like, why are we doing only one class in this? Like, I feel like I want to learn more about this. And so that was like the inception of like, okay, maybe I should get an advanced degree. Mm. But then when I thought about it and like how it was so in and out in Nigeria, in my mind, I was like, well, the only way I'm going to get an advanced degree is if it's outside this country. Then I still didn't know where, but like, it was like, it had to be outside the country. After you graduate and you've defended, you get sent on youth service or national service, which is that 1 year after college where you get posted to different states to serve the country. It turned out that my name got skipped because of a clerical error.
So, what?
Yep. I did not get posted. Yep. I did not get posted with my colleagues. Like, I can remember someone asking me, and they're like, oh, John, you didn't get posted. And honestly, I don't even know. Stupid as it is. It was like a feeling of shame. I felt shame. And it's just like, oh, doesn't mean you have a carryover? Like, what happened? Like, that's literally what people are
doing. Do you know what happened to me, by the way?
Oh, it did?
Yes, yes. I felt so sad about it.
Yeah.
Because I had to be batch B, but I ended up being batch C. They missed my name. Yeah, yeah. It happened to me. Yeah.
Like, it's not your graduation that you're it's you know, going for NYC that's like, okay, you actually finished university. That's the true proof that you did graduate.
But I used that time well.
Anyway,
I used
like,
to prepare for GRE and apply to schools. Like, he ended up being a blessing to these guys. Oh, sorry, go ahead. Scratch his pass.
You know what? That's exactly where I'm going with this. Like, I was just like really pissed. It made me even more pissed with Nigeria. I was like, how can you fucking tell me, you know, just clerical error? So now I need to move my life by like plus 1 or 1.5 or 2 years. Are you kidding me? So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go ahead and apply to schools. And so that's when I like studied for my GRE. So friends told me, oh, you know, there's Education USA in Abuja. You should join them. And that's when I got involved in them. And because I wasn't doing NYC, I just had time to just study just in those couple of months, get my GRE done, get my GMAT done, and then apply. And at the time I applied to master's, I applied to, you know, PhD program. And then I can remember again, I didn't want to do a PhD. I just wanted to do a master's because, you know, PhD, you're going to be too old. You're not going to marry. You just want to do master's, you know, short. And then, frankly, I did not know that you could just do like a direct slash, you know, master's PhD
from the
US, right? So that was news for me. So like, I remember debating between the two. And then I had this conversation with my dad. And this another conversation that was pivotal in like my career. And I was like, should I just apply for master's or should I go ahead and do a PhD? And my dad literally told me, you know, how long is PhD? How long is it going to take? I was like, about 5 years. 5 years is a long time. I'm going to be, yo, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, you know, you can be sitting here in this Nigeria and not even know what you did with that 5 years. Like, the 5 year will roll.
Move so fast.
Exactly. Like, if a guy goes for the 5 year will roll,
you're either going to
have a PhD or not have a PhD. And he was right. So, I decided to go on the PhD route, and that's how I ended up applying to UT. Leke made me apply to UT on that.
Oh, really? How did you meet Leke? You guys didn't go to school together. He went to UNLAG. Like, how did you meet?
No, but he went through the same Education USA program. So that's how I met him. It's like, you know, you didn't put UT on your list. You should put UT, and then I put it in there, and long story short, we're here.
Look at that. I mean, that same thing happened to me. I remember going to school then too. I was just crying, bawling. My mom had to come and get me. You would have thought maybe I resisted, like, they didn't find my certificate for graduation.
Exactly. All of that now, who cares? Like, I had carryovers.
Yeah, it took me a while to even remember as we were talking, because but then it was like so sad, you know. And then I was supposed to get married, you know, the year after, so I was just thinking about my timeline, like, oh, that means if I on my day of matching out, it's gonna be my, it was just so many things happening. But who cares about those dates now? Nobody, it doesn't matter. You know, for anyone in that situation, whatever life throws at you, whatever happens, try to make the best use of it, because you just never know what can come out of that. And I go back and I'm thankful for that break they gave me, because I was able to sit down comfortably, write my diary, apply to schools. And, you know, my friends were talking about, just like, I'm good. I wake up, go to bed, send out an email, apply, and voila. So let's talk about transferring to the US, right? You came here for your PhD by yourself. What would you say, if you were to paint a picture of what your time was like at UT, how would you describe that whole experience?
My time at UT and my experience in there, I think, I think it was many things, right? So one, some part of it was challenging because you're thrown into a mix of people from very many different places who are excellent from like wherever they're coming. So all of you are like excellent, okay? You're in this bucket together. Right. And even though, yeah, exactly. Even though like it's not supposed to be competitive, because you're all in graduate school, you're all doing your own separate, you know, research and study. Somehow it ends up being in some form competitive. And I don't know if it's the American education system or whatever. Like, you know, in Nigeria, it's the student versus the professor, and students are helping each other. Yeah. No, this is going to snitch on you to the professor or something. Like, I'm like, whose side are you on? Yeah. So it was a little bit hard navigating the difference in academic lifestyle here compared to Nigeria. One, but from the fact that, you know, it was just the cream, so to speak, like, you know, people who are good, or, you know, they excel academically, and then now you're, you know, competing with them, and you don't know what their background was. If you all studied the same thing, but like different levels of competencies, and there was always that question, you know, oh, was Nigeria good enough? Am I prepared well enough? Or, you know, am I missing something? So that was definitely a challenge for me to navigate. That was one part in academics. The second part was, in terms of interacting with the professors. So it's kind of like you're a co-creator with the professors, and it's not, you know, oh, they just tell me what to do and then I go do it. It's like, yeah, you're telling them, you know, this is happening in my life. This is also happening in my life. I want to get this degree. How can we create a plan forward? Like, if you miss a test, or if you even fail a test, you can be like, can you give me like a redo or something? Like, I didn't know any of those. Like, you know, I didn't know you could just, you know, go on the sidebar office hour and
even like you know, dialoguing with your professor. Talking to your professor, like on the first name basis, and just co-creating knowledge. How dare you, Nigeria? Yes. How dare you?
Exactly. So that was something that was definitely new for me, and it took some time to ramp up. I do wish that I ramped up a whole lot quicker, because I think it would have made my experience much better. Versus what it turned out to be. Because my first 2 years, frankly, I felt like I was struggling a bit. But then after then, you know, I got my C's, and I, you know, figured out what I needed to do, and I could have converse with my professors and tell them, no, you know, we're not going this path, and the research is not we're going to go, and things like that. And it turned out being really, really good for me, academically wise. In terms of social interaction, because you know you come to school, but there's also the social life.
Maybe because,
you know, UT is a predominantly white college, or it's classified as such. The black people in there are mixed together. I mean, you alluded to this when you're like, you saw me at the NHB building and you're like, my fellow Nigerians.
Let me just find one.
Exactly. It's like, you know, hard to find gems. So when you see that, you appreciate that. And so consciously or subconsciously, there was that community that was formed, but like, you know, you just seen a random black person walking the street and you just do that nod, or you just, it felt like, okay,
I see you.
See you. I identify with you. I know your date. By the way, it's my agent in arms. So that community, and then the Nigerian graduate community, you know, you guys did an excellent job, you know, just hanging out, bringing in the new folks, having activities outside, going to school, and that made me meet people from different pharmacy. Like, well, not why we met, but we ended up hanging out in that sense too. You know, game nights, all of that. That was really good for me. That was a highlight of my experience at UT, because friendships from then I've carried over down here. Yeah. And these are excellent people. You know, these are people who are in different parts, like, you know, different fields, different sectors, academics, you know, consulting, industry, and like, they're good at what they do. So they're in, you know, big positions. And I think this is just a good network to have. So I think a lot of my network was built from there. And I'm grateful for that for sure.
I mean, it's funny you mentioned that. And I totally agree with you. I hear a lot of rhetorics about, oh, Nigerians, they don't like to help each other. I'm like, I mean, we can't just throw that blanket statement across the whole population of people. Like, for me, those things you highlighted were one of my own highlights to while I was at UT, because I can't even imagine what I would have done without this kind of community, especially when things were really getting rough. And these are people that knew where you're coming from, where you currently are, and how to get yourself out of it. Like, they have those contexts. How else can you find, you know, your way out? So for anyone listening to this, people can hurt you, but your salvation still lies in people, in a way. Find the right community, give back, and hopefully you can thrive as well. So you finished school, and then let's talk about your job market. Because, I mean, she's a hot kick. She's very smart, by the way, in case you haven't been able to tell. So let's talk about
I knew you had ulterior motives.
I'm not even starting.
I just confirmed it at this moment.
Let's talk about your job situation. Like, how was it like for you getting into the job market, and what do you think made you... let's just say stand out, because for you to get a job, you have to stand out from everyone else who applied for it. That's in that context that I mean. But what are some of the tips that can like to recycle for engineers like you, especially female immigrant engineers like you, trying to break into the market space?
Okay, so I'll tell the story of my job finding journey, and then maybe from there we can pivot into like tips for, you know, female immigrant engineers as well. So I graduated in 2020, right? So that's when COVID hit and everybody was going down remote. It was in the middle of the school year. It wasn't like end of May. It was February or March, something random like that. And I was exhausted with grad school and I needed to get out. But in terms of like finding jobs, I think what I did then was, again, casting a wide net. I applied for, you know, postgrad positions. I applied for industrial positions. I applied across different industries. Sad as it may be, frankly, the application system and like getting into the job market it needs a lot of refinement, because I see people with great resumes not finding jobs, and then you talk to recruiters and they're like, I don't have quality applicants. And I'm like, what are you talking about?
What are you
about?
Doing? So is it mismatch? Yeah.
Exactly. There's a myth that, you know, there needs to be a sync up to happen. But that all of that to say that you would need to cast, you know, a wide net just to get like a quality one. And then once, you know, your resume is getting picked up, what I did do was use the Career Center at UT to refine my resume. That was like a free, you know, resume before for you.
You already paid for it, by the way. You're too sure paid for it.
I guess it's not fair. But yeah, so for instance, in UT, they have the Engineering Career Center, ECAC, and you would go there, you have your resume, and you can design, you know, different resumes for different market groups and have them walk through it and give you recommendations, take those recommendations, fine tune your resume. And then once you get picked up, you can also even use them to practice for interviews, actually. That's also something you could do. They'll give you interview questions, because they've had students who've gone through this. They can connect you with them. They have, like, you know, database, quote unquote, of like, you know, possible questions you can get. And so I definitely used that a lot when looking for my actual full-time job. But what did really get me the job that I'm in right now was a referral from my professor. So I think, and this is what I learned in my, you know, latter years, where I talked about, you know, getting in sync and building, you know, your career path, so to speak, with your professor. There has to be like some syncing up, okay? You need to understand, okay, what your goals are, what your goals are, and somehow find a way to be diplomatic about it so that you get what you want and they also get what they want.
They want, yeah.
So, you know, in his mind, yeah, exactly. He needed publications in high ranking journals. And I'm like, okay, you know, we can get you this, but I need to be out now. And can you support me in doing this? Mm. And so eventually when I was, you know, when I was looking for jobs, I gave him my resume, frankly, and I told him even who I was, you know, talking to, interviewing with. And then he'd be like, oh, you know, I used to work, because he was in the industry at some point. Like, I used to work with XYZ. So my present boss used to work with my professor. And it was pretty much like, oh, just send your resume to him. And I got the job. And I got another offer as well with as a postdoc position, which I had to decline. But I am still in talks with that professor, which again all boils down to engaging with people and just keeping that link. Okay, people, it's like you said, you know, people are your best links. People are the ones that are going to get you from, you know, point A to point B where you want to be. And so with this professor, even though I declined the job, I was like, you know, you can collaborate with my professor on XYZ. You can, you know, come talk to my company about XYZ. And right now, if I'm counting the list of professional advocates, people that I think will advocate for me professionally, I'm going to count even the professor whose job I declined as one of them. Yeah. He's like a strong advocate for me. And if like any time, like when I was applying for my NIW, for instance, I was like, you know, would you write me later? It's like, tell me what you need. And just put my name wherever you need to be.
That's a green card, by the way. That's NIW, for those that are not familiar with the lingo. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
Right. So just to like condense that one, it's like use the tools available to you, frankly. And one of those tools is like, as a student, you're going to get, you know, they have the career fairs, they have the prep before and after. I'll definitely use those. And then don't feel like you're at war with your professor or something. Like, just try to find the middle ground, because like it or not, they do have a network that could benefit you and that would benefit you, frankly, if you're able to use it well.
Yeah, I agree. As someone who's been on both sides, I would say, if you want to, how do you attract the attention of your professor? Go to class once in a while. Show up. Ask questions. So the when you're emailing and say, please, can you write me a letter? I'm going, who is this? I don't even recognize your name. You know, be visible. Now, this might not be applicable for everyone. Say, for example, those in undergrad, where there's like 200 people in the class, you don't expect your professor to know all of you. But if you're in grad school, for Christ's sakes, show up. Engage with your professors. Let them know what your career plans are. Internships, if you can do those internships, if your program allows for that, you know, that's also another way to build your network. Because as an immigrant to this country, what you are buying is social network. You know, this is why we go to good schools to go to get a degree. You didn't start from undergrad, so you have a lot of catching up to do. But it's doable. So you've been working now for 4 years, right? Corporate life. Yeah, 4 years. Yeah, thereabouts. What would you say it's been like for you as a, let me use the label, the black immigrant woman, fierce in a workspace? How do you survive? What's the longevity tips for surviving in the kind of field that you are in, given that it's male dominated and
I mean, I think, and this might be unpopular opinion, I think this black educated woman, or I don't remember the exact phrase that she used.
Black immigrant educated fierce.
Yeah, exactly that. Could be used to your advantage, particularly at this time. And that's because, you know, companies, the corporate world, they're under a lot of scrutiny to make sure that they're doing right by quote unquote minority groups. So this is a time, and there's a time to ever wave this flag and use it to the best of your advantage. No, I'm going to say it out there.
Before they change their mind.
I swear, apply for roles that is like a little bit above you, because maybe for one, you're going to be the only one like yourself applying to that role. So yes, apply to, you know, reach, you know, those extra reach out roles, frankly. And I mean, hush it out when it happens. Like, I remember one time, you know, some colleague was organizing a meeting, and they were putting it on MLK Day, which technically is a holiday, but like,
yeah.
And I'm
it's
like,
a public, yeah,
and then
yeah.
They knew, said, Joanna, feel free if you don't want to be at the meeting. What do you mean, feel free if you
feel
don't
free.
Want to be at the meeting?
I'm at the meeting.
And quote unquote, it's like I wasn't an active participant in that meeting. I didn't really need to be there, but like,
but
why
still.
Would you schedule something that actively excludes me from it? Because by default, I'm kind of excluded from that meeting. So please, no.
How to be anti-racist.
Exactly.
Don't put meetings on MLK and Juneteenth for one.
No, don't. Don't. No matter what, you just don't. Never do that. It doesn't even matter if there's no black person in that building.
I know.
Give people the flexibility to not.
You don't look like an ally. What if there are white people that want to support their black friends? They can't even go for those rallies anymore. Because you've already assumed, because they are white, they don't celebrate MLK. How dare you?
I swear, it was beyond me. Can you say this? I think that's just like maybe some of the minor things. Frankly, I work from home, so I don't get to interact with, like, you know, my colleagues or feel more of like this passive aggressiveness or any potential thing that might exist in this workspace. Mm-hmm. I can't say I've personally experienced anything that's like a cause for alarm or feel like, oh, we really do need to address this, or I feel like a disadvantaged. No, but I'm very aware of the fact that the company is definitely always up there pushing for, you know, representation, diversity, and all that. Like, you know, they put up a fire and you can just see Theo, blah, 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 and all of them look like Mikey. It's like, how about the other people you have in here? So they're active about it. And for me, I think it's an opportunity to shine, frankly.
Yeah. That said, still do your job very well. Like, whatever your standard excellence are, yes. So that way you don't prove the naysayers wrong by being, prove them right by saying, oh, you're diversity hire. Like, please don't, yeah.
No. I think just to hammer on that, we're really already qualified in a certain level. And, you know, face it, in corporate America, you're not doing half the things you did that your training prepared you for. It's pretty much routine and all that. So I definitely agree, and I would echo the fact that, you know, be excellent at what you do. It's weird because in reality, they say, oh, you have to be 2 times better as well, compared to, I don't know, the average white Joe, for instance. You have to prove yourself twice as much. Yes, that's the reality. That's the case. And, hopefully we're able to fix that. But even though you're feeling like, you know, I am not 100% excellent or I'm not the best, like, don't write yourself off. Don't be the one to reject yourself from that promotion, for instance. Because the reality, and what I've come to realize, those white Joes, they don't know any more than you do, frankly. That's just the reality. They're just like, you know, saying, you know, I should get that. Oh, yeah. And that's why, you know, there's this whole thing of like, oh, you just echoed what I said and all that. Go for it.
Yeah, it's all right. You're not, how I put it, even though a lot of companies are doing diversity hire, don't make yourself the token filling that spot. Like, make sure your work still speaks excellently for you. And then one thing that I've also learned is that create your allies at work. And sometimes people like you. I live in Oklahoma, where good luck finding black professionals ample in the workspace. We don't have them just hanging around. So I'm quite, you know, I'm a good networker. And I want to always keep recycling that. Sometimes people that will help you might not look like you. They might not have your experiences. But as long as they're able to listen and empathize and create that pathway for you to thrive in your workspace, take that help. And then you pay it forward. And you be the face of representation you want to see in that workplace if it's, you know, conducive for you. But all that to say, find the help you need, okay? And don't linger in pain. I guess, for those that don't really know you, what would you say... What is this still drives you? So you've talked about your family values, your pursuit of excellence. Now that you're by yourself, and I ask this because when I moved to the US, I've had to go through an auditing of my belief systems. You know, because growing up in Nigeria, a lot of what you believe in, what you do, is sometimes it's based from your household and people around you, which, you know, there's some merits to that. When you're in a place like the US where you expose a lot of your belief systems, you're like, okay, do I still believe that? Maybe not as strongly, but I still believe in good versus evil and all that. What would you say still drives you, like, right now, since given that you've been out of the house for quite a while and you're making life, you know, for yourself and by yourself, what are still some of the core principles that drive you? And that's going to be my first question.
I think for me, it's common humanity. I just feel like I'm such an advocate for common sense. Seriously, I feel like, you know, most of the battles, most of the wars is like common sense and trying to show some empathy. Yes, you ended up in a position that places you maybe a little bit above this other person, but just be for a moment, take a break and say, what if you were on the flip side? This is not to say I'm an expert at doing this, no, but in terms of what I would consider my value system and how I decide to either take up opportunities, treat people, guide my, you know, what's good versus what is bad, a whole lot of it is from just common humanity, okay? Like, you know, this is also another person. There's stuff that I want, but it's common humanity. Show kindness to people because, you know, in the end, you might be in a position where you do want somebody to show kindness to you and you want to hope, you know, to God that they would show kindness to you. Mm. That said, do not expect kindness from everybody. I guess the way it works for me is, you know, everybody starts at a platform where it's like, I'm expecting common sense from you and kindness from you. But then the moment you show me that's not the case, now I've adjusted adaptive learning. I've adjusted that, okay, this is how this person is going to be. And I'm going to protect myself. You do need a level of self-preservation. So for me, it's, you know, common kindness, but then also self-preservation, right? You need to survive to be able to help other people. How I think about it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you need some form of naivety to traverse the world, in the sense that even when people do evil to you, you still want to keep doing good. If it's left to me, I always want to do the right things, right? That said, also be very wise so that you don't get, you know, all spent out and your heart becomes so eroded and all of that. And you forgot to even mention this. Joanna is about justice. Hey, Joanna is a justice warrior. Joanna is a justice warrior.
Where have you noticed? Have we had a conversation?
I have played Monopoly with you, so I know.
Do you want to know the funny thing? You
extrapolation.
Know how, like,
extrapolation. Joanna fights for justice. You also do casa work now, so that's an extrapolation of that. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. But you know how, like, you know, you're doing a job and they make you do this personality test and all those ridiculous things that you take? Every single time, when I say three value systems that comes up for Joanna, it's always justice there on top. The motivation.
I'm not surprised. So, I guess if you were to look back in the future and come back to this conversation, right? Let me ask you this way. The future you, if we were to listen to this, what kind of words would you say now that would shape that future you? Basically, what's the future Joanna going to be like? If we could shape that, which I think we're responsible for how we shape our future to a degree, what would you like to see?
Why you be asking tough questions like this? We need you handling, like, you know...
I've even been nice, Joanna. I've never been embarrassed. I've never been embarrassed us. I haven't.
You know what? That's actually true. That's surprising. Lord, frankly, I like to think that I am in a constant state of change. Like, the way I think now, it's an adaptation for who I've always been. I would think in my mind, I like to think that this is the case, but I always like to think that, again, you know, I'm open to learning new stuff about myself, learning more about the world, accepting, you know, things that I don't completely know, and becoming a better person overall. So if I were to paint, like, a picture perfect, you know, version of me for, I don't know, how many years, X years from now, I would like to think that I am a confident person. I'm empathetic. Family-wise, I have, you know, helped navigate some professional advancement for my siblings and my loved ones. Personal-wise, you know, I have a family that I'm, you know, taking care of. Professional-wise, I would like to think that, you know, I am respected as an authority in my field. You know, you're at the point where, you know, people are like, oh, you know, I think this person can do this. This is who you should reach out to, that you're not necessarily chasing after things. And then the whole landscape-wise, I'm just at a level where I am independent in the sense that I'm free to make choices, not necessarily... with the fear of, like, oh, if if I lose my job, then I'm going to crumble or something like that. Just having that freedom to be able to make whatever choice that is good for me mentally. That's what I'm prioritizing. Yeah. So the way I like to put it is I'm optimizing for happiness. Now, the buckets of that happiness, over time, it changes to change and get toppled over. But right now, I would think on top of that is just my mental sanity. It's not necessarily like high pay. It's just that mental sanity. It's a good balanced relationship with my friends, my family, my loved ones. Then again, it's of course financial stability and, you know, but then it's also the idea to feel like, you know, I'm contributing, whether that's through my job or other ways.
Yeah.
I don't know if that answers your question, but
it does. It does. It's not one thing, and you described it, you know, perfectly as you want it to be, like your family, your profession, your personal life and all that. And those are great things. A bit of a non-sequitur question would be, and I think your response kind of fed into that. How do you balance? It's a general question. It may or may not be applicable to you, but I've had a couple of questions on the podcast about it. So I was just wondering if you had an insight into it. So how do you balance the responsibility we siblings abroad face in taking care of our loved ones back home? And I know for most of us do it as a thing of, you know, pride, like we can help out, let's just help out. It's not because we have to do it. We can easily just go non-contact. But how do you balance that with the whole black tax concept and also not getting, you know, that anger that comes from, I've not even taken care of myself. Everything I'm just doing is just sending the money back home. For those who might be in those positions where they don't feel like their life is theirs anymore, as they are making money, is, you know, always a project back home or somebody to rescue. How do we balance that without feeling overwhelmed?
I think I can just speak to what works for me. I think you should be comfortable with saying no. It's not something I used to be comfortable with. Mm. But now it's something that honestly, like, I still feel some guilt from it, but not as much as before. And I'm able to talk myself out of it way quicker than before, okay? So sometimes some things I would just say no. And you need to also prioritize yourself and prioritize your goals. Now, that said, I am all for balance, okay? So in prioritizing, like when I was describing what I see for myself, I do see, like, you know, my family success as part of my success. So even in prioritizing myself, I am still allotting something to them in my mind. But is it like at a point where, oh, you know, everything that's happening at home, I just have to be involved, or I just have to be, you know, the supplier for that? No. Yeah, things I've said no to. And this is like, okay, a personal example. There's a time they're like, oh, you know, your sister's kids, you know, they can't pay school fees. And would you send school fees? And for that, I actually did say no. Now, somebody might think, okay, this is strange and all that. But yeah, this is nursery school. This is not like, again, I do like a whole balancing system as to like, what do we really
have? Yeah.
I'm like, you will miss a couple of days or something like that. And I'm sure they'll figure it out. And they figured it out, you know? So maybe if I had reached the point. Now, I'm not saying that's a good example, it's a good template. But I'm just saying this is a personal example that's happened for me. And I don't regret in that situation saying no at all. Yes, you're here and we should be appreciative of what we have. But you need to embrace that some of that is because of you and because of what you've done. And yes, the reality is, some things, you know, we really don't have control over. You are lucky, you know, God blessed you, you're favored or whatever it is. But also some of it comes from what you've put in. Feel free to enjoy and absorb that moment. Because, you know, the way I think about it, like, you only have this one life, okay? And it's in this one life you would both suffer and reap the reward for it. So do a little bit of both, okay? I'm not saying abandon your family, but don't feel completely responsible for everything them. That's going on in there and for their choices, you know, and for the situation. It's sad. Actually, I'm angered, you know, that we have to choose this. Because, you know, if I had grown up, you know, in a well-to-do white family here, for instance. You know, this is not a conversation. Like, it's going to be so strange to me because...
It's a different kind of money problem we'll be having, but not this one, yeah.
Yeah, a different, totally different kind. It's like, you know, Brother Jay contributed only 40K or something when I...
Yeah, or you crashed a Ferrari. Now we have to buy you a new Ferrari.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. Crashed a Ferrari and now we all have to...
That's the kind of problem I want to have now. Just kidding. I don't want to have problems. Exactly. I don't want to have problems. Exactly. Just no problems.
Just to see, I want to have, you know, maybe you're dealing with, and this is on the dark side, oh, now we have to send picture to rehab again or something because we don't have any problems.
More money, more problem, right? But at least I like the more money part, you know. Let's just stop that more money and put full stop at it, no problem. Don't put any semicolon. Oh, yeah, and thanks for that response. You've articulated it very well. I think for... I've had to also come into myself in the fact to understand that these problems never go away. It never goes away. You solve a problem, something else is coming. You know, at the point, you have to just draw a line. I've come to realize 13 years of living abroad, problems never go away. Problems back home never go away. And there's always going to be a strong, pitiful story for why you need to help. But guess what? If you're not able to and you genuinely have a good... You don't even have to even explain why. You know, and no, it's simple. I'm sorry you're going through this. Oh, sorry, I cannot help. That's it. And keep it moving. You can't save everybody. You will be drained. And you don't want to sit with that anger that you know your heart is not in it and you're doing it. So, yeah, God help us all. So, I know you recently ventured into modeling, right? How's that going? Why do you look so fed up right now? You're muted, by the way. Why do you look so fed up right now?
Yeah, because I am really fed up. This was supposed to be fun. God knows that I did not.
You literally ticked body image on your survey. You literally ticked body image in your survey. What was I supposed to make out of that? So ask you, are you suffering from body image? If yes, you might be entitled to compensation.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Am I?
Tell us. Give us a secret.
None of us have been models. Talking about my, you know, modeling path in here. Like, you think I might be able to show down the line?
Yes, you will be. None of us can be models. So please let us live vicariously through you, please.
No, I think that's overselling it. Thing, you know, I'm a whole model right now. I'm signed with a local agency, but I'm still in the whole process of getting it all worked. Yes. I don't think I shared that with you, actually.
You did. Yeah. You told me on my birthday when you called me on the cruise. Yeah, yeah. That you had a shoot coming up. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That's
cool. So, but you know, I will be excited when that actually turns into booking. So far, it's nothing but a fancy hobby.
Yeah, yeah.
Apparently, just like with everything, it takes a process and...
Shocking.
It takes... I don't know what else. Like, you know, I'm just putting something. Apparently, that's not it.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, you know, how it's definitely affected me, I think both positively and negatively, because you start to question even the most ridiculous thing about you. But then on the positive side, you also start to embrace your own uniqueness. You just realize, you know, every model is going to model differently. Everybody's different. And your selling point is just you, the way you are, like just you. And that can be a confidence boost as well.
Anyways, cannot wait to see what that looks like for you. And thank you so much for sharing that. Now,
there's still a chance of me throwing in the towel. So don't hold your
How dare you throw in the towel? You have the looks and the courage for it. I think you...
I just like to try it.
Yeah. Try it and see. If it's not for you, you know it's not for you. And I think, thankfully for you, it's not where you're getting your, you know, daily bread from. You know, that will have just been a lot of stress. Imagine having to depend on that for you. So, I do this rarely on the podcast. You've been such a good guest today that I'm like, okay, let me give you something back and reduce the pressure on you. I'm gonna give you the opportunity to ask me one question. Whatever question you want to ask about Joanna. So that Joanna is already licking her lips. Like what you do, my prince. You guys cannot see the video. But I think I got pregnant a little bit right there. Joanna, one question. Be nice about it.
Where'd
you start?
Let's say
I'm in a generous mood. Don't ruin it.
Question about any question to ask you. Oh yeah. So I was saying
I'm already having palpitations because I never know with you.
What palpitations are you having, Mo?
I don't know.
Relax.
This is you. Okay.
This just gets better when you relax, okay?
When you say relax, Seb, they're saying calm down to a woman that's ready. Say, police is your friend. Calm down.
No. Okay. Just relax. Enjoy. This is supposed to be pleasurable, okay?
Okay, Joanna. Okay, I'm relaxed.
So you're, I mean, you're more, you're amazing. You have this podcast that you've been running. There are people, hundreds and maybe even thousands of people who know you but don't really know you, right? So I guess the question for you is kind of, maybe it's going to be too faceted. Like, how do you define your inner cycle? And then secondly, how is it that you keep the fandom at bay but still engage in a way that it doesn't feel like, oh, she's too big for me, you know, I'm really looking up to her but she doesn't have time to respond to me or something like that? Like, how do you balance that?
Joanna, what kind of intellectual question is this one? I think you're gonna ask me, like, when am I getting my Korean boyfriend or just something like that. I'm just kidding. So the first question about my inner circle, I'm big on community, as you know, right? And I've seen the power of what that can do. It's just the testimony of not doing life alone and the result of that. One thing I found that really works is that when you are genuine and you're of quality, you'll find the right people who can do that life with you, right? So, like, for example, our group. Are you still there? You're frozen.
Yes, yeah,
okay, can you hear me?
Yeah. I can hear you. Don't worry.
Okay, okay. Like a group, you know, should I tell like one of my favorite memories of our group was when we were in Calgary and when we went to see Angela and we're in that hot tub and just talking about our life experience.
Oh, like, yeah, girls me, in a hot tub. Yeah, yes, it was really cold. Yes. It was cold
in Canada, but it was just a raw moment of emotions. Like, what pulls us to excellence? And hearing your story and, you know, everyone's story and how we, you know, there were even tears and we, you know, hugged ourselves. For me, that's it right there, at the very core of it. Now, I know that you all don't, I don't know everything about you and you can't say you know everything about me. But the things I've showed you about me, like my vulnerabilities and the struggles I have, just the way you've been able to embrace and support and be there, that's beautiful. That's what life should be about. That's what community should be about. So that's how I keep my inner circle. Not everybody knows everything going on with me. I was talking to my therapist the other day. I was like, God forbid something happens to me and people come together and they're like, oh, let's talk about more. You hear different things from different people. They'll all say similar things, but not one person can say they know everything, maybe apart from Taiwan. Even Taiwan, maybe I know some things, but I have committed with great iron locks on just certain aspects of my life, and that's all they get to experience. But I have a very select few that they're able to see the intersection of my work and my personal life and then my passions. And I think you girls, you're part of those, you know, very small community. Now, as far as getting too busy, I don't even think I'm that much of a... I'm not even a celebrity. I'm only known by people that know me. No, so no. No, I'm not.
You want to take a poll on that?
No. Please, far from that. Growing up in Nigeria, one thing I learned quickly was the importance of power. So my mom got pregnant out of wedlock, like you say it in Nigerian way. And that experience really affected the way she carried herself. And as a product of that, right? And even when sometimes you hear people talk about your mom or, you know, by the way, my parents ended up getting married. But the way, and my mom was very quiet, doesn't say much. So she was unassuming. And then she had this, you know, very bold in your face kind of daughter. So I would like look at them like, how dare you like it? So I was always like, someone just ready to just fight any injustices like that. But I've learned that in some spaces, you will not even be regarded as anything unless you have power, unless they think that you have substance. So that was a drive for me. Like, I wanted to show that power can be influential. You can use it for good, right? I'm not crazy about fame. I could have done a lot of things for on my podcast to become super famous. For me, it's just a medium to share stories. No, it's a medium to share stories. I'm not here to bash people or sensationalize stories. I really want to connect. I want to use the podcast as a medium to connect. And that has been my goal. So it's an organic build up towards that. And I want people to feel like even in the struggles I have, I do great things. I don't deny that. But there's also a lot of struggles I have. There's a lot of process behind the person you see. I also want to show that, you know, carefully, because again, my story is not just my story. I have a lot of characters whose interests I have to protect. So that's why I'm very systematic about how I share things I go through, because it's not always my story, right? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I want to show what it's like to be human, to struggle but still be great, right? Yeah. It's why I still want to have time for people, because what's the point of being it all if you don't share our stories and our processes and carry people along? If I don't make someone feel like I understand you, even if I don't understand what you're going through, I'm here for you. That's really been my core purpose in life, to connect people and make them feel that they can do it. Because I've gone through a lot as well, and I'm still here, and I would like to replicate it. That's why I never want to stop connecting with people. At the very heart of it, that's where I get a lot of my power and my inspiration for. And then the influence, I know I do have influence in my circle. I want to keep that clean. I want to keep that good. Nigeria taught me that if you're not influential, they don't listen to you. And if you're even female, they forget about it. So I want to prove that wrong and be like, I can be influential and I can still bring the people in, and I can still pull a chair for them to sit on the table, and every voice, you know, should matter. So yeah, that's really my push and pull. Oh my goodness.
I love it. Did you wing that? You didn't wing that.
For real, I would have known you're going to ask that question. You made me go deep.
You made me go deep. You know the funny thing?
I have never shared that power thing before. I've only thought about it. Move it to my therapist.
You know how we do this. We only go deep, right? Like, I'm not doing any of that shallow stuff.
The deeper, the better.
Exactly. While we're still on topic, I think it's really beautiful what you shared. And you know the most amazing thing that it struck me while you were sharing that was that she's already doing it. Like, you know, it's some people like myself, they're not sure what they need to be doing, talk more or less of actually knowing it and then doing it. But you're all the way there. So you're already doing that, you know, making people feel comfortable about sharing their stories. I was hesitant about being here. You didn't even send me any prep questions. We just decided today that this call was happening today.
I called her in the morning. I was like, hey, we got some free time because I'm home and you want to get on the podcast. You know, so but I hope you felt welcome here. Like, I didn't feel like I put
exactly.
you on the spot.
So that's exactly where I'm going. Like, I didn't feel real. I didn't feel like, you know, it felt really natural and normal, and it felt like a bonding moment, so I'm appreciative of this.
Not that we needed bonding, because Joanna and I bond a lot. That's a problem. We bond too well. Any more chemistry to be an impression? But you know what? Speaking of which, I actually really enjoy coming to visit you in Houston. Like,
oh yeah,
yes, even Ari, yeah. I love my time in Houston as a whole. I still have my doubts about the states, you know, because Austin, yeah. But your home and your person, you know. I just like how chill you are, you know, even though you have your organizational skills and things in a particular way. But you're a great host, by the way. You're a very great host.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, you make me, it's hard for me to relax on vacation. No, for real. It's hard for me to feel relaxed, like when I'm in people's houses, because, you know, you're always very careful. Don't touch that. No, but you're great. You're great. I just wanted to pass that along to you. I think I've told you that
before. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. No, thank you. I appreciate it.
I have told you that before, haven't I told you?
Oh, you have. Okay. But, you know, this is, I forgot.
Now you remember. You can play over and over again. Yeah, you're a great host.
I know. And just to have it on record, very thoughtful. Just part of the recording, just so I can play.
I will do that. I can even make a videogram. So I'm putting a note to my VA. Please make a videogram for... please make a videogram about this part, about Joanna's attribute as a great host.
Oh, Lord.
And make it with cutesy videos, very demure, Lord, very mindful videos, so that I wish she can play
very
over
demure.
And she can never forget me.
Together.
Very mindful.
I can never forget you. You've already made sure of that.
Impossible. You can't.
Exactly.
That's my path to world domination. Be unforgettable.
Y'all fucking. Oh, this is gonna be our flying banner.
Yeah, be unforgettable. I'll go viral in your mind. But yeah.
Oh my god. Okay. I just, Now we're going
elsewhere. Lana, we've done great. We've done great. We haven't done any double entendre. We don't even know our other side. Let's keep it kosher, okay? We're good. I know you're itching to just bust something, you know.
No. There's
explode all over. Yet. Just calm down. Calm down.
I just feel warm and fuzzy and welcome. Like, we're matching and it just feels... We're in sync, you know, in tune, vibrations, everything. It's the best way to go, you
guys can never see the look on my face.
Taiwo for me.
Anyways, thanks for that. Was a good question. You made me really go deep. Thanks. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Thank you for coming on the podcast. Of course. I mean, I don't even know. I feel like for you, you really want to talk about some of the charitable work you do on the side and your work with CASA. But keep up what you're doing. I remember last time I came to your place in September, I left you a voice note after the fact. Because I was thinking about Joanna, like, wow, she's doing great. Like, you're doing a lot. I look at you and I'm so proud of the person you become. And I know that the future is, and you should be proud of yourself. I can call you my little sister as a way, but you know. Oh. But all that to say, I'm super proud of the accomplishments you've made and just the strides. And the future is just going to be bright for you. And then you have your dreams and your hopes and your aspirations and all of that. But watch them come to fruition. Because you're a very hardworking, genuinely kind, good person. And it will all work out for you in good time. So yeah. So all of my thoughts and prayers towards you.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Well, this has been the podcast with Joe. So for people that want to connect with you, do you have any way they can connect with you too? They should connect at their own risk, by the way. Just kidding. Joanna is sweet. Where can people find you if they want to connect with you?
Follow me on Instagram, please. Okay. Infinix_Joanna.
Is that the OnlyFans one or the other one? Is that the OnlyFans one?
We have OnlyFans. But let's put a pin on that. We should have a conversation about it.
Wait, no, I'm not having OnlyFans with you. I can't do OnlyFans.
No. This chemistry. Everybody, like, we need to...
Make money, right? If you can show brains, I can show my brains. Open my brains out to public. No, that's the only part of me they can see.
No. Trust me. This would work. Have you seen the shit out?
Even talking about it, I'm already having palpitations. And it's not even like the exciting kind of palpitations. What will my daughter think of me? We're already trying to raise her in the way of Nigerian way, with pride. So she can look back and also talk about the Adedipe family pride. Please, Joanna.
Oh my gosh. Well, no. You know what? This is it. It's okay.
Anyway, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, despite such a short notice. But it was really nice connecting with you. And yeah, thank you.
Yeah, same here. Thank you. I appreciate it.
We'll let you know.
Have a good rest of the evening.
You as well.
Stay safe with that tornado.
I know. So today, November 4th, we had a tornado warning, hence working from home on a Monday when I should be in school teaching my kids. But it's okay. The Lord works in mysterious ways. So does Oklahoma. The Lord works, but Oklahoma works harder.
She says that like she's not happy.
Somewhat. All right. Love you, girl. Take care. Bye.
Love you. Bye.
Bye. All right, everyone. That was the podcast. Thank you so much for watching. We hope you enjoyed this production of the Mossable Podcast. In any event, I remain your host, Mo. Catch you on another episode of the Mossable Podcast.